What's up, long players? Welcome to the Long Play Listening Party, the show where we go deep on local music, music gear, making records, and whatever else sounds good to us. I'm Howie Howard from Mr. Furious Records. We've got Nate back. Nate, what's going on?
Yo, yo.
Royce Diamond, as always.
Hello.
And we are joined by Till Willis. Till, how are you?
Oh, I'm doing great.
Excellent. And Chance, is it Dibbon? Sorry, I should have asked earlier.
Close enough. Yeah, Dibbon. I'm doing all right, sir. How are you doing?
I am good. I'm excited to be talking about y'all's new record. And I closed my window. It's called Small Guarantees. Is that right?
Yep.
Small Guarantees. Okay. Memories serving so far. This is an extremely unique record with a very interesting technical backstory. I'm also interested in the artistic backstory. But let's set a little bit of context and talk about who each of you are individually as artists very briefly so that people know where the collaboration is coming from. Chance, why don't you go first? Quick version, how'd you get into music? What kind of music do you make? How do you describe your own music?
Sure. I've been a longtime listener of music, which I guess is a weird, lame way of saying that, but that's true. I got into making music because it's something that I always wanted to do, and the type of music that I make, I would probably say, veers from ambient to noise to sort of industrial. I kind of pick a lot of different genres that I work in based on what the project needs or how I'm feeling in that moment. But definitely more in the experimental vein, instrumental, non-vocal kind of stuff.
So far.
So far, that's true.
How is that going to work?
And Till, how do you describe yourself? What's your history with making music? You said you started at 12.
Yeah, I started gigging regularly when I was 12 and writing songs then. I have known I wanted to do music since I was 6 years old. And like, I didn't tell anybody that. I just kind of kept that tucked in the back of my mind. And then when I was 12, out of the blue, my dad bought me a guitar and a book on how to play and said, if you learn, great, and if not, oh well. You know, and so there was no pressure from anybody but myself to do it. And it was like, oh, the final piece of the puzzle. And once I had kind of taught myself the basics out of that book, I felt like I could say, now I want to be a musician. And I've just been working towards that ever since, you know, pretty much every day.
That's incredible. And so before, did you guys know each other before the musical collaboration? Were you friends?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. That's actually sort of an interesting story. So I was a music writer for The Pitch and for Lawrence.com. And I had connected with Till because we had a mutual friend in common. I think it was you were helping him move out of my house was the first time I'd met you. And then I kind of had that tucked in the back of my head and that this was a guy to check out that – I mean, just because that was a great, great hang. We helped a friend move, had some beers, and had some great conversation. And so I'd actually done a couple stories as a quote-unquote music journalist with Till. And then over the years from that, we just became really good friends. And
so much so that I officiated his wedding.
So, yes. Yeah, he was my officiant at my wedding.
That's what's up.
So, yeah.
And I think a lot of just talking with Till and learning about the music making process and the artistic process, that laid a lot of different seeds for me, for all of my different artistic pursuits as far as music, but also other things. I mean, music for me right now is my main thing, but it hasn't always been. I come from a background of writing and photography. And I mean, I know Till has a great visual art that he does as well.
I do abstract painting and stuff. So,
But I just from talking with him as somebody interviewing him and coming over to his house and listening to records and listening to how a record was made and how he decided to make these different choices, that certainly laid a lot of different seeds that were planted later for me.
Hey, Till, is that your art back there behind you on the wall?
Yeah, there's some of it on the wall, around, everywhere. And I do most all my own album covers as well. So, I've always loved that kind of graphic design.
Got you.
So you guys have a pretty extensive background together before this collaborative album came out. And the music is going to start in a few seconds. So I want to give people a chance to, you know, to hear a minute or two of music. And we'll do that periodically, you know, throughout the show. But there's a lot. That's good to know. I didn't know that. And that's good to know as background for how this all came about. Because as folks are about to hear, this record is really a meeting of those worlds. But each song kind of approaches it differently. And it's a meeting of those worlds in 8 different ways or 9 different ways or however many tracks there are.
This would be my first listen, so.
Chance, and this one we've got kind of the two things that you're known for layered on top of each other. That's not what the whole record's like, but can you use that as a way, can you use this song as a way to introduce us to the concept of this collaboration?
So, when Chance and I first started talking about doing this together, we were having a little drink, a socially distant drink, pandemic style, and I was like, you know, maybe I could send you some guitar stuff that you could just manipulate in any way you want to do your thing. And he said, I might have some pieces I could send you that I've already got going. So I went home that night, and the next day I sent him just some kind of electric guitar things for him to do, and he sent me a track, and this was one of them. And with each of these tracks, he had already titled them. And so as I was listening, I was writing lyrics to that title, and then the emotion that I was getting out of the bit of music he had sent me. I would sit down with them, and most of them started with just an acoustic guitar like this one, and try to find a key that would work with the tones of what he had sent me. And then, like I said, just writing to the emotion that was in the piece that he had sent me, and then build the lyric off of that title. Once again, just to that emotional quality.
So, Chance, you sent him is what we're hearing, that noise in the background. Is that all it was that you sent him?
So I had sent him, I think, 4 very long tracks. Yep. Some of them were pretty shit. Like, one of them was 25 minutes long. and these were tracks that I had been just kind of playing around with. A lot of times when I work on a project, work on a thing, after I finish a project, I'll try and do something else that's completely different from that and just keep going with that particular idea and seeing what happens from that. And that's where those tracks came from. And I didn't know how to title them. And so I read a lot of poetry. And so I pulled from poetry books that I had at my desk and just kind of opened up to a page and said, oh, that's the title of this track. And that's what I sent to Till. So now the era, once I was working, comes from the poetry of this poet, Lucia Perillo. And the core 4 or 5 tracks that I sent him all come from different poetry lines or things that I had sort of snagged and had around me at that time. And that's what I sent him. And I think Till did a really amazing job just kind of taking that cue. And it wasn't even really a cue that I wanted to give him. It was just what I had to title the track.
Right.
A lot of times when I title a track, sometimes it's really obvious. Like, I was just messing around the other day, and I made a track that was called Piano Noir because it sounded like the piano track you would hear in a noir film. And so pulling from other different sources really helps me just go, okay, this is what this track is called. And I really think Till, like, just picked up on that because he, for me, even though I'm a writer, with music, writing is not a big part of that. But for Till, because he's such a singer-songwriter and an artist in terms of that, he is able to take those kernels and really balloon them out to bigger, broader concepts.
Yeah, yeah. I dug the lyrics in that song.
This one we're hearing right now, Fire, Snakes, and Booze, is one that was a manipulation of some guitar stuff I sent Chance.
Yeah.
And so that's the only music. All I'm doing is singing and clapping on this one. And I like this one because it had a real big kind of like Brian Eno thing, the way he was able to treat all the guitar parts in this. So this is kind of the reverse of the other one, where I sent him something, he manipulated it, sent it back, and once again, just kind of finding.
Yeah, the lyrics are easy to remember too.
Yeah. Well, it just kind of needed that kind of a chant thing, and that's something that this album. I mean, I'm sure y'all find this too, but like with each project you enter into, it allows you to tap into a different set of influences you have. And so a lot of these, I was able to draw on things I love, like Brian Eno. Are some Bowie stuff that I wouldn't necessarily do in a lot of my own stuff, but it's music I just deeply love. And so that was a real treat. That was just allows you to tap into something different.
See, I thought, Till, I thought Fire, Snakes, and Booze was a reference to the time
the snake came out of my pants.
A snake came out of your pant leg.
So this is, yeah.
What?
Well, see, Howie, I think you tweeted out something out about like making some comparisons, and you mentioned Springsteen. And going back to that first song, I heard a little bit of Springsteen influence in there too, especially maybe some of the subject of the lyrics.
Sure. I mean, all my favorite songwriters were kind of, socialistly minded songwriters, from Springsteen or Dylan or Guthrie or whoever, Joe Strummer. The funny story Chance is alluding to is that there was a moment, as I'm sure we've all had during the whole pandemic thing, where like you feel a little down and you're just like, man, I just need something to bring me back up. And I'd taken the dog for a walk and I came home and I told my wife, I was like, it's just such a nice night outside. I would love to just sit by a fire with some friends and drink, but obviously I can't do that. I was like, I'm going to go in the backyard. I don't care that it rained all day yesterday. I'm going to go try to get a fire started in the backyard. It's about 9:30 at night. I'm down there. I'm blowing on the coals trying to get this fire going. And I was in flip-flops and I felt something go up one of my pant legs. And I'm like one of those people, I'm deathly afraid of snakes. I just do not like them. And something went up my pant leg, and I jumped up and I shook my leg, and a snake fell out on the ground. Wow. And I was like, fuck it, no fire. And went in the house, and my wife was like, oh, no fire? And I said, oh, no, I'm done. Not tonight. Just, that was it.
Back to the booze.
But it was a nice jump start to the old heart, and got me out of that dark frame of mind.
Still you do what's expected of you today.
So this is Today's a Day, not two. Let's hear a little bit of it.
Yeah,
sure.
Said to travel, find your place, find your place, find your land. Confusion reigns along the highway side. Exits were missed by confusion's pride. Still you do what's expected of you. The days of day not to. Days of day not to. Lift our hands on arctic clouds, arctic clouds. If I was fixed to the 16-year-old, those could come to kiss the floor. Still do what's expected of you. Today's a day not to. Today's a day not to.
Royce, first impressions, you're absorbing this for the first time.
Really, I was listening to the way that he laid lyrics over this energy. I'm trying to figure out like the space that they're putting everything in. That very first song, when it first started, I felt like it was like a guy playing a guitar underneath a bridge, and the world just got busier and busier around him.
Till, is there any guitar in this at all, or did you just sing over there?
No, this is another one where all I did was the shaker and then the vocals. So it was figuring out, again, with all these, I've had to figure out what key the sounds that Chance was sending me were in, and then figure out a melody that would work with it, and again, just fit the tone of it to convey the same emotion that what he sent me had in it. I didn't want to mess with that or try to rein that in or anything.
And that was that just kind of an experimental process, intuition, or did you use any tools that helped you with that, or how'd you do that?
It's just listening, you know. The, like they say that the true art of music is all just in the listening. And that's what it was. It was just listening, and I set out. I do a lot of my lyric writing in the morning, and so I had written down all of the titles, and I kind of had the general mood in my head of what it should be. And I actually write lyrics in the bath. I take a bath every morning. That's my reading or writing time. And I would just sit there with that title and write to it. And so then I would have the lyrics, and I would go sit there, like with this one, where I just didn't hear. And then I would just go sit and listen and try to sing over it until I got a melody and things that would work with it. So.
What did you send him, Chance? Like, I mean, I know there's, like, it sounds like droney, something there, but what's all the sort of percussive element?
So, a lot of what I had sent him from this track and then the original tracks were manipulated, arpeggiated synth lines that I had made in... I'd made in Logic and then processed further. And the further and further that I processed it, it started to sound more and more like a guitar. It started to sound more and more like what somebody might play really close, you know, close in the guitar there. And so that was one of the original ideas that made me think that, okay, these random tracks that I have that I'm exploring that I don't quite know what they are might be something for Till to pick apart and pull apart and make into something. So that's what I sort of sent him. The title of that was sort of the motto that I'd had for the whole pandemic. It comes from a poem that I had come across in a zine collection by this writer by the name of Holly Babanok, I believe, and her whole poem, it's almost as much a visual poem as it is writing. It was sort of like a calendar, like a weekday calendar, and it was titled No. That was the name of the poem, No. And then each day, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, had an entry in it that said, today is a day, not two. And for me, during this whole time, that was a very inspiring phrase that kind of settled me down, because we have such a loss of sense of time.
Yeah.
We're doing so many different things. And to remind yourself that, hey, no matter what happens in today, no matter what's going on in today, it's just one day. It's not two. It feels like two, or it feels like less than one, but it's just one day, not two. And that was a very powerful idea that I'd kind of taken with me throughout this whole process. And that was sort of the genesis of this idea with this project. And in fact, that was actually the original title of the very long piece that I had sent Till to work on.
Sorry, Till, say that again.
I swapped the titles of those. That was the only time I did that, because the lyric I had written to that title didn't fit that piece of music anymore that Chance had sent me. That was the only time I did that, was swapping them around. And I also just say, I love that when I would ask him where the titles came from, he would tell me it was from this poem or that one. I love that it was almost always from female writers. I thought that was really awesome.
Yeah, I think the only male writer that our title came from was from James Tate, a poet that has Kansas City roots. This is crazy.
How did the mixing process go once you guys had completed this music?
So I had the track. Chance basically sent me a stereo mix of what he had done. I brought that into my DAW and then just did my multi-tracking, and then I mixed basically to his stereo track. I didn't manipulate that or touch that at all, to set things in there, which, you know, created its own set of challenges because I didn't have a multi-track of what he had done, so I would have to mix my stuff kind of to feel like there was movement between it, so it wasn't just like a static stereo track playing the whole time. So that was,
how'd you do that?
Just by ear, you know, just by listening. I'm a firm believer of the old George Martin adage that all you need is ears when it comes to music. Like, it doesn't matter how much you're trained or not trained. If you've got ears and you're really listening, I think anybody can do this, you know? And I think that's what's very democratic about music making.
That's how me, an untrained musician, has entered into this process. Till is a very skilled musician. Till is a very knowledgeable musician. Till knows what he's doing in a way that I will never know what he's doing. And part of it, that's why I was really excited about collaborating with him, that he was able to respond to some random things that I put together and he could extrapolate out. But I think there's a value to that. Everybody has an inherent music theory that they own. You know what things feel like, you know what things sound like, you know what should come next. And what should come next is where you can really make your art, because if you make what's next and you make what's next sound really great, that can be awesome. If you subvert that, that can also be very awesome and very, very interesting and very cool. So I'm a testament to the idea of the democratic principle of, if you know what you're listening to and you know how to listen, this is for everybody. Because I don't have a music background other than the music listening that I do.
Well, Chance, while we're here, we just go ahead and tell that story you were kind of telling me before we started rolling about Till getting you into Reaper and just kind of the whole journey about how you started making music. Because I think some people might find, I think that's a really inspiring story, and some people might hear that story and go, oh yeah, I could try that. That'd be a fun experiment.
Yeah, absolutely. So and a big thing I still do is writing, and that's kind of the background that I have. And then that transformed into comedy, and then that transformed into podcasting. So I had a podcast with a friend of mine, a music-based podcast, and we'd actually done like the second episode or third episode over at Till's place. This is referring to the mutual friend that even introduced us at the beginning. So we do this comedy podcast, and our friend, our mutual friend, doesn't really quite have the idea of how to record it, of the best way to record it.
Yeah, I actually think I did one episode with you guys over at his house.
Yeah.
And then you guys were like, that didn't really work out so well recording-wise. Can we do it at your place? So yeah, you guys came over here for an episode.
Yeah, it was weird. I think Till was brought in as a de facto producer on a completely different episode, and it was exploring a lot of different aspects of music through the lens of comedy. And when we did it over at his house, he showed me Reaper, and that kind of was like a big light bulb moment for me, because this music podcast was lacing in a lot of different recorded tracks, and so I would stitch everything together. And like, okay, you know, here's the audio files, here's the soundtrack, here's all this. But then not to have all these music files, And that kind of set me on the path of, hey, maybe if I start to mix these things together or take snippets together, maybe I can make something. And so, you know, I at that point I was taking like drum parts from Silver Apples and combining it with like Peruvian rock music to see if like I could make like a mixtape or something like that. And that kind of sat in the background for a bit. I would do that as a hobby, and then eventually I got a nice enough computer to where I could actually start to play around with different sound elements and plug in hardware and plug in different inputs to progress forward. But it was really Till showing me how Reaper worked, how simple it is, and how Reaper connected with my ideas of editing. Because I'm very familiar with editing from both a photo and a writing background of manipulating and changing things, and how that could translate to music. The curve stayed up late, thinking it was more than I deserved. But you know, that's just between you and me. By the way, can you believe these riots in the street?
Did you guys do anything with this guitar, or is this just Till playing guitar and then it's laid over?
So this is another one where I believe the bass of this that Chance sent me is manipulated electric guitar that I sent him, and then I cut the acoustic guitar on this and then started manipulating that in various places to distort and break down in the same way that I felt like the track he sent me did as well.
Okay. Yeah, I like that. That sounds really
cool, man. And then coming back and putting the vocal over after that.
Yeah, I would say for the most part, with the exception of the 25-minute noise track that I had sent him, Till was really good at figuring out what the structure of each track should be, meaning that it's very close to what was already there. So that 25-minute noise track that I'd sent him, he completely reshaped it into the song that it is, and it's so much better for it. But I guess overall what I'm saying is that Till had free license to take what I had sent him to shape it to the song that was kind of appearing before him,
okay,
and fashion it into that structure. And I'm thankful for that.
But even in that, I didn't take any of these tracks and, like, I didn't cut and move things around or edit them. I just kind of found where it would be the logical place for me to come in on and the logical place for me to exit on. I didn't want to manipulate anything he sent me because I figured that's what he intended. So I didn't, no filters, no EQing or manipulating of anything that he sent me. I just kind of took it for what it was, figured out my entry point and my exit point, and that was it. And like with the 25 minute piece, which is coming up here, you know, I did a pretty long song over it, and I was just like, but this is my exit point, you know. I don't the full 25 minutes is, you know, just not what I need.
Yeah, and on that thing, I actually released the original version as sort of its own sort of deal, because
which I thought was super cool.
Yeah, I like the original effect of that piece kind of escalating and encompassing you and being this long durational thing. But, you know, Till fashioned a really nice, concise, it's going to sound like it's not concise, but he fashioned a nice, concise 9-minute song out of that. It's the most beautiful track on the record. It's the sweetest track on the record. That he isolated and found that piece, and the fact
almost
that
almost asleep.
Yeah, almost
yeah,
asleep.
Yeah.
That's the most hopeful track on the record, I think.
I know, And the fact, and I'm sorry, Till. I mean, the fact that I had sent you a 25-minute track, you listened to that whole fucking thing probably a few times, and then here's the part where I come in and I come out, and then you made it work. That's an incredible testament to Till's sensibilities, his sense of what it means to be a songwriter, his sense of musicianship, his sense of what it means to be a music listener, and it's incredible. Like, all of these tracks, I was always blown away by what Till had sent me back. You know, I sent him some stuff that could have been really nice and just been a fine noise project. But there were some elements or some aspects of it that weren't quite just baseline noise. There were some things that kind of popped out here and there that felt more like guitar lines, that felt more like things that could be actually songs, but I didn't know how to make those happen, but Till did, because Till is the fucking champ when it comes to that.
I don't know about that, but thanks, man. Something I was listening to or reading recently was talking about how recording is, especially when you record yourself, it's all about holding a mirror up to yourself the entire time. And it's learning to be okay with what you see in that mirror, you know. Because it's all about that self-exploration. And when we all started recording, I'm sure the first thing all of y'all heard when you recorded something was like, ooh, that's me. I don't know that I like that. But the more you do it, the more you learn to detach yourself from that and look at it objectively and think, am I enjoying this? Am I not? Because we've all recorded some things that were very self-indulgent, I'm sure, that you later listen back to and go, oh man, I was really full of myself that day. And you learn to like listen as somebody else might and just like, am I enjoying this? And it's why I can look back at so much stuff that I've done and I go, I enjoy hearing it. But I enjoy hearing it not because I think it's great music. I listen back to things like I look at an old photo album. And I look through it and I'm like, oh man, I remember that inside joke that was happening in the studio that day. Or I remember when somebody said something to me that brought about that lyric or this, that, or the other. And it's just a nice trip down memory lane. And I think that's part of just learning to enjoy what you do. And if you don't enjoy what you do, then why are you doing it?
Yeah. Well, this is almost asleep, and I want to listen to it a little bit, but I wanted to ask about the track we just listened to, You've Been Here, at some point.
Sure.
I owe a debt to you. I believe this time each mountain's moving. If we move fast and careful,
so on this one. This is the notorious 25-minute track he sent me, and I sat down and I had it on my studio monitors playing pretty loud, which is how you want an ambient piece like this to be. It's like some of that David Tudor stuff where you just want it, you want to feel the reverberations. And if you have this track and the capabilities of putting it on some speakers that can really move some low end, it's like a religious experience. It's got that low end just resonance. And this chord progression just came to me and was in key.
I feel blessed.
And then I had written the lyric. The actual original title he sent me was Almost Asleep with the News On, I believe. And I kind of cut off the last bit, just almost asleep, and then it became a song about my daughter. And just that kind of affection in there for that. And yeah, I just laid that down over it, and then I thought, well, we'll just do like a big, you know, Neil Young solo at the end and call it a day.
There's some great vocal production, some hard panned, kind of springy, I don't know if it was reverb or echo, but popped out when the vocals, you know, on your the notes you really hit, there's that stereo effect. I encourage people to listen on headphones too, because that was really cool.
Awesome, thanks, man. I was going for that kind of like late 50s kind of thing that would happen in vocals that was just so magical and cool when you listen to some of those things. And you know,
it's where those vocals ballooned.
Yeah. And I don't ever like to over compress things when I'm mixing, because I like them to have that kind of organic bloom that can happen when you're really pushing it or you pull back. And I just don't want it to sound like it's all too tight and right there, you know?
Yeah. That's that idea of, I think Grail Marcus talks about this, about worrying the song as far as worry as like fidgeting or like pushing a rock over something.
Yep. It's an interesting story. The guitar I've played on this song and the first one is this cheap little classical guitar that was the first guitar I ever owned. My dad bought it for me when I was 12, and it had been in the closet forever. And over the last winter, I was like, man, I kind of want a nylon string guitar, and I was shopping them. And all of a sudden, one day, I'm like, what the hell are you doing? You've got one in the fucking closet. Go pull it out. I went in and pulled it out, and I fixed some issues that it had. Strung it up for the first time in probably 20 years, and that thing has become a song machine. Like, I've written so many songs this summer out of that. Like, it's like the guitar was just thanking me for, you know. And I believe instruments have lives like that, and I, sometimes they can gratify you. Like, thank you for rescuing me from that and fixing me up, showing me some attention, you know.
It's cool that spot you picked too. I mean, the drone is getting more harmonically rich and more saturated and more distorted as the Neil Young solo is happening, and the guitars are moving in that kind of same direction, and so they're really locked in like that.
Thank you. Well, and towards the end of this really long one, after the fade out, the fake fade out and comeback, I wanted to come back in and do all that I could to make my guitar sound like the piece Chance had sent me. Like you couldn't tell what's guitar, what's just the noise track, what's the all this. And so here's one. It fades back in here, and it's just playing with feedback and everything else to like totally blur that line of who's doing what here. And I tried to do that at a few different little points throughout this album.
Yeah, and I really appreciated that. Like, it was Till totally like was able to stitch and structure all these different things that I had sent him, but then left these weird little burrs or pockets of noise that he was just jamming to. And for me, that was really exciting because that was really us meeting at the level. I mean, he's an incredible songwriter, singer-songwriter, and musician, and that was him taking that little flicker of noise, that just pure noise, and seeing what he could do with that and responding to that in that moment, in that instance.
I love noise. I'm one of the few people I know who actually owns and likes Lou Reed's Metal Machine music and stuff by like John Cage and Tudor.
Really fucking great record.
Yeah, that I find them like so meditative.
Yeah.
So I didn't want to mess with that. I also didn't want salvage fans coming to this record and feeling like it was just me playing over top of something.
What fucking fans do I have, man?
And well, yeah, I mean, and I also
we got a couple right here on the call. I mean,
exactly. Yeah. And I feel like any collaboration, it should be this dance between the two people, not like one person just playing over top of somebody else. And so I always tried to strike that balance, even whether I was playing or mixing the record. Of like, how can I make that work to where it really feels like a nice dance between the two?
Well, I think, I mean, that's really the one of the main themes, and I think you hit a complete home run on it. I remember listening to this for the first time, and you know, in bed on Bandcamp headphones. The first listen for me was really about the juxtaposition, right, and the separate places you're coming from, and the separate, you know, that huge contrast and where your starting points are, maybe. Facts. And progressive listens, more of that dance comes through, and you find those moments that it is more, well, what belongs to who here, and where, you know, I can't tell where this part comes from, and maybe this part, it sounds like it was played live in a room together, you know, or so the record does really move among all those kind of different possibilities within those starting points.
Awesome. That's because I'm good at faking shit.
Dogs of Havana. I'm not.
Well, it's like, I wonder, you know, what you know, Chance is doing that's coming from him, or if it's something that he manipulated that Till sent, you know, like some guitars that you just like totally, you know, freaked and
yeah,
and made into this like awesome sound bed.
If it wasn't pointed out, you would not guess what is the manipulated guitar stuff in this. It's that destroyed and creatively put back together.
I want to see your session. That's what I want to see.
It's not as impressive as you think.
It was literally, hey, Till, have some files. Oh, you sent me some files? Okay. And then we went back and forth a few times, and then we're like, oh, this is pretty fucking cool. And that was their our session.
Well, and I did such minimal overdubbing. Like, this track, there's guitar, and there's a vocal track, and that's it. And then I went in and manipulated my acoustic guitar track to fit, and that's pretty much it. I mean, it's very sparsely tracked, really. Which is something I took from just a ton of, like, old rock and roll records, is it somehow less is always more. Because it leaves it so much open to your own interpretation as you listen. I think your brain fills in the gaps.
Space is pretty an important idea, and like I've made a lot of dense stuff on my personal solo stuff, but the more and more just from this project and some other ideas, I think about space a lot more, about what space means between different notes and different music and different pieces of music.
Chance, will you say a little more about your raw materials? You're sending, you know, a stereo file, but how much stuff is going into that, and what is it?
So there were like four or five bassline tracks that I had sent Till on this record. I think there was like another few or two that I had sent him after that, once we kind of figured that there was maybe something to explore here. But just like what he said at the beginning of this recording, this all started because we were just hanging out socially distanced at my place, and he said, hey, I think I might have some guitar tracks. Can you manipulate them and see what you can make out of them? Because he knows that that's kind of the shit that I love, to just manipulate sounds. And that was at the point in time in which I said, well, I actually have some things that I might want to send you that were kind of more guitar sounding, even though they weren't actually guitars, that I didn't quite know what they were because they didn't fit exactly what I had been doing at that time. So those bassline tracks that I had sent him were very much arpeggiated synth sounds and improvised synth sounds that I had made in maybe Logic or with my MIDI log and recorded and then processed further. So I might have processed them through, taking them from Logic, bounced them over to Reaper, which is my main assembly process application, added some effects, bounced those out, brought them back into back into Logic, processed them through different sound applications within Logic. Like, you can take a sound file and make it sound and process it through a specific amp or a specific guitar line or what have you. And so I had done that a bunch of different times to arrive at the results of the files that I had sent him. And before I had sent it to him, I thought I might put it out as like a weird just kind of goof or a weird just kind of one-off kind of thing. But there was something about it, because it sounded so much more like guitar. And I know my buddy Till is very good at guitar. Very, very good at guitar. That I think even before he brought up that idea, I think that was kind of there of, hey, send this to Till and see what he thinks. See if he can do anything with this. And Till, for me, on my own musical stuff, has been a really nice, a nice sounding board. I don't know that he always is on the same wavelength, but he has the ears to listen and provides me really good feedback as far as whatever the kind of stuff that I'm doing. And, you know, I'm maybe motor mouthing here, but like, I'm the first to admit that I'm very much a hack. I'm a hack when it comes to this stuff. Till is a diehard singer-songwriter. This is in his blood. This is what he was built for. This is what he was made for. For me, this is another element of art for me to explore, but I'm thankful that he was able to take what I had made as part of that and see something in it and make something out of it.
So you draw a contrast there, but in a way, what I'm hearing, that's true, certainly, by your own... I'm not gonna fight you about how you describe yourself. I see this similarity in that what the role that listening plays for Till, editing plays for you, Chance. And so there's this way that you're really well matched in terms of process and philosophy, even.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. I think that's what we kind of really meet.
Yeah, absolutely.
What was also cool for me, if I'm not mistaken, that last track, Factual Earth Part 2.
Yeah.
Was that one of the only ones that really had any percussion in it other than... what was it?
Yeah, I did some claps in one and a shaker in another, but yeah, that's about it. That when I did that second part of Factual Earth there, I don't know, it just seemed to call out for something else. So I put in the xylophone and a little slit drum to go over that. It just seemed like a nice way to round out the album and give it a little hopeful ending.
Well, it was a little something extra, but yeah, I thought, man, I was just really cool that, you know, just knowing that the rest of the album is just it's guitar and noise, and there's it's not, you know, there's no drums.
No, you know, that's not at all.
I'm serious though. I'm sure there's, obviously there's plenty of other music out there that doesn't have any drums, but just, you know, from, you know, lyrically, it's really cool. And you don't really, I guess I didn't necessarily think about it. It's not a big deal. It's just, it's very cool.
Yeah.
I don't know if that make any sense, but.
No, Royce, it makes sense. Totally. I think, I mean, from my perspective, I don't know how Till feels about this, but from my perspective of working in the electronic space, anything can be a drum, right? Yeah. You can turn any sound into a drum if you cut it the right way. And I think that was what was really interesting about this record, is that there really wasn't a lot of percussive elements other than maybe a splash of some... you know, a splash of some shaker or this until the end, just to give it that level of distinguishment.
Well, and it's interesting because...
I'm sorry.
Oh, no, go ahead.
I was just
going
to ask Till, like, having it... when you went to lay your lyrics down, did it feel comfortable, or did you have to find a space to be able to lay it down without having that drum beat?
Well, so each one of these tracks, they have their own internal rhythm, and that's what I tapped into. So no, I didn't have any trouble laying down a vocal. It was just becoming comfortable with the internal rhythm of the track Chance had sent me. And I was just going to say, oddly enough, on the second part of Factual Earth there, I don't necessarily think of the xylophone or the slit drum as percussion instruments. I think of them as melody instruments. And I was just creating a melody once again over what Chance was doing. The tunes where I feel like I laid down percussion, which was... you know, like Fire, Snakes, and Booze or something, or adding a shaker in, were the ones where I felt like it needed just a little extra oomph. But even then, I was putting those in after I had done the vocal. I always wanted this to be a project where the my part, which I viewed mainly as being the vocal, to really be just intertwined with what Chance was doing and not take away from that. And like I said, not make it feel like it's just a background part or just a bed track I'm playing over. And I really just wanted to interact with that as much as I could.
Yeah, and I wanted to ask about you've been here.
Oh, yeah.
Like what? Yeah, like was that one of yours, Tills, or would that did that start with Chance?
That was I sent Chance some guitar stuff. That's a one where he manipulated some guitar stuff of mine and sent it back.
Awesome.
And actually, there was Chance briefly talked about cutting that from the record. I liked it because when he sent it back to me, I didn't come up with a lyric, but I came up with just this guitar thing over the top that for me really drew from like some Junior Kimbrough influence and stuff and some more contemporary Mississippi blues stuff that I'm into. And I was like, man, no, this is a great moment in the record. I mean, most of the Selvage stuff, I mean, all of it is instrumental. So why not have an instrumental thing in the middle of this album? And it's a nice break, and it carries a mood that isn't reflected in any of the other tracks.
Yeah, I liked it. Yeah.
Thanks, man.
And I'll say this. I think I, just because of the stream here, I think I misidentified the wrong person as Royce. So I apologize here.
It's all good. Were you going on to say something, Chance, or?
No, I just wanted to acknowledge that.
I didn't catch it.
No, I didn't either. It's all good.
Yeah, no, I have a lot of different screens up here, so I apologize for that.
No worries. Well, guys, is there anything we didn't cover or anything you want to say about the record that we haven't had a chance to talk about yet?
I think it's been hit pretty good, Ben.
Yeah. Yeah, I'd say so. I really thank you guys for having fun with us on this.
Yeah, thanks. Appreciate it.
Yeah, I appreciate you guys being willing to come on and talk about it and answer, you know, all the questions. I mean, that's why we're doing the show is just to have an opportunity to talk to people and kind of get where their head's at behind, you know, how they make music. So,
sure.
Appreciate it.
This has been great. It's been a lot of fun.
Yeah. I always enjoy these.
Were Nate, final thoughts?
I think I just said them, but
fair enough.
I mean, you know what I'm saying. But yeah, I mean, seriously though, thanks. Thanks for, you know, being cool and being like, yeah, let's talk about it, because and it's also, you know, it's a great opportunity to actually sit down and listen to people around the area that are doing that are playing music and finding out just like things that you have in common and picking up tips and all that kind of stuff. So,
yeah. I don't know where Till comes from on this, because again, we both come from so many different backgrounds, two different sides of things. And Till is a very studied musician. In fact, Till sends me music document recommendations like every other day.
No, I'm a document.
and I watch a lot of them, and I do learn some things, but Till's a very studied musician, a proper musician, a proper writer, a proper songwriter, and I guess with regards to music, for me, I'm an explorer. Like, I just kind of go for it, and I say, you know, I mean, every time I do something, I learn something, and every time I do something, I figure something more about what I want to have, what I want to say, and my voice with regards to that. But what I would say overall is both ways are correct. You know, Till's path is as correct as mine, and my path is, I don't know, as correct as Till's, but is as valuable. You can get a lot of different value.
Oh, yeah.
Totally.
I guess what I'm saying is I'm better than Till.
Clearly. Royce, where are you at? You've heard the whole thing just once, so what was the journey like for you?
I'm a lot like Chance, where, you know, I come at it, I didn't study music in school, but I do study engineering.
Everything
about how it feels is what I'm listening to the whole time through. And even like the width of the record felt like it got progressively wider all the way to that last record. You know what I mean? Was that intentional?
You know, I really like to put a lot of thought into sequencing an album. And
yeah, that's
how it makes me feel. I feel like an album is a bit like a train journey, where like song one is you at the platform about to step on the train, and where you get off the train at the last song should have taken you somewhere else. And I really try to think about that in sequencing. Like it's a bit like, and I know Chance and I have talked about this, it's like if you're writing a story, you really want it to have a nice arc. Otherwise, nobody's going to want to read it. You know, there needs to be a story arc in there. So that's awesome. I'm glad you feel that way.
Yeah. And I would say that Till was a big shaper in the arc of the tracks and the structure that they took. Cause I definitely had a different idea about how I wanted to structure them. As we sort of developed the tracks as they were coming out, but he kind of stuck to his guns, and I agree with what he had put out there, with what he had sort of decided or said, this is the way it should be.
I can be a real hard ass.
No, I don't even think I said anything about that, but like it was me just kind of going, okay, so this is a little bit different than what I sent you. So let me take a second to listen to this and think about it for a second. And I go, oh, nope, you're correct. You were absolutely 100% right. And I think that's a big part of the artistic process, is to not jump immediately, especially the way that we did ours, is to not jump immediately or question what the other person did, but to kind of let that thing sit for a second and go, okay, let me think about this for a second. How does this actually feel? Because we're both very expressive people, I think, me and Till and R. But I think we also are pretty shy about stating our definitive artistic intentions on certain things in certain regards. And that's how we express ourselves to each other, is we present a package to the other person and say, okay, you figure out exactly what I'm saying. And that requires a little bit of time to spend with that particular side of the conversation. And once you do, you realize, oh, yeah, that person's right. That person's correct. And more than often not, I defer to Till, because Till knows exactly what the hell he's doing.
I appreciate that.
Well, everyone should check out this record, because it literally everyone, because it's totally unique. I can't think of another record that sounds like it. And I can't think of another record that was made like it. And that's really special. And I applaud you both. I think it's a fantastic record.
Thank you.
And I'm really glad you talked to us about it.
Well, cheers. I appreciate you all talking to us about it.
Yeah. Thank y'all.
Yeah,
thank you. You, Royce, and Nate, thank you so much.
Yeah, absolutely.
Thank you.
This has been a real pleasure.
Yes, sir, we'll do it again. And both of you guys put out your own stuff, so next time you guys have albums out.
Hell yeah.
I don't think it'll be very long for both of us. We both just crank and crank and crank, because like a shark... Who knows what will happen if we stop?
Yep. Precisely.
Word. Later, everybody.
All right. Yeah, thanks again, guys.
Thanks so much, everybody.